Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm your host, Chris Manning, from Fear the Sword and Hardwood Paroxysm. Today, I'm joined by my first, quote-unquote, in-studio guest. It's one of my colleagues of Fear the Sword. It's another Ohio Bobcat, which is always the best thing in the world. It's Michael Drabshaw. Mike, what's going on?
Oh, not much. I'm just happy to be here, be on the pod, man.
Yeah, if you're not following Mike, he's Fear the Sword's newest writer, so you should follow him on Twitter. Mike, where can people find you on Twitter?
At @M_Drapcho, that's D-R-A-P-C-H-O 21.
Yeah. So make sure you follow him. He's, again, Fear the Sword's newest writer, and he's going to help us break down some more stuff like he did yesterday, if you didn't listen to yesterday's show, about the Cavs recap, the recap of the Cavs-Wizards game. So today, we didn't get to this yesterday because we wanted to just recap the last preseason game and JR's debut, but we're going to go through the NBA's GM survey, which came out on Tuesday. Obviously, the Cavs were mentioned a lot in it because they're defending champs, save LeBron James. But I think there were some interesting results and just some interesting things in general about how the league perceives the Cavs and how they perceive LeBron. We're not going to go too deep into the one that I think we both found the funniest, but LeBron got 19.4% of the vote of being the best power forward in the NBA when he says he isn't a power forward, and he also was the vote of the best small forward in the NBA ahead of Kevin Durant. So LeBron graded two positions. Not surprising.
I mean, realistically, even though he doesn't play power forward a ton, and even though he doesn't consider himself a power forward, if you do slot him in that four spot, you're hard-pressed to find many people that are better than him. So I don't think it's necessarily outlandish. It is just kind of funny.
Yeah, it definitely hints at, I think, what his future might be a little bit more than what he is now. That's a whole other conversation. We're going to start with a general team thing. So NBA GMs, 31% of them voted that the Cavs would win the title again this year. That's last year they won. It got 53.6% of the vote, and those GMs are obviously correct. And this year, Golden State got 69% of the vote, and they're projected to win the finals. No other team got a vote. So we'll start there. And I'm just going to ask you this. If you were going to pick one team that wasn't the Warriors of the Cavs that could win the title this year, who would it be?
Ooh. That's a really tough question. It's got to be coming out of the West. There's no way anyone from the East, I don't think anyone from the East could take the title. The first team that came to my mind was the Clippers, even though I've notoriously been, I don't want to say a Clippers hater, but I've never been a fan of that team. But against my better judgment, because they've burned me in recent memory, I'm going to go with the Spurs, just because I have loved the way the Spurs play since pretty much forever. Kawhi Leonard is only getting better every year. And even though they lost Tim Duncan, that's not much of a loss at this point, because by the end of the year, he was a shell of what he once was. And Pau Gasol, he landed in probably the only spot left in the NBA where he can be an effective contributor on a good team.
Yeah, I think the Spurs, at least offensively, are a good fit for him. Pop's going to make a lot of use of his ability as a passer. I actually think it is the Clippers, though. I think, A, they have Chris Paul, who is still at the peak. He's probably going to decline a little bit this year, maybe because of his age. But when you have Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan, and J.J. Redick, who in my mind makes them a big four, they just have more talent, I think, than any other team that isn't Golden State or Cleveland. And yeah, nothing has broken right for them in the past couple years. the small forward position for them is just awful because Luke Mbamute is not a starting caliber NBA small forward in 2016.
Absolutely not.
But I just think it has to be them because I think San Antonio is going to be good, but you know, I think they probably take a slight step back, and I think the Clippers just have that amount of talent. So we look at the Cavs. They're obviously going to probably
run through the East. Realistically, though, I'm not picking anyone other than Cleveland or Golden State to reach the finals.
I would be shocked if another team made the finals.
Exactly.
Like, there are scenarios where another team does beat one of the two teams, but it involves injuries to both teams. Like, LeBron has to get hurt. Curry and Durant might have to get hurt for Golden State not to make the finals. Like, it's just these doomsday scenarios for everything. You look at the Cavs, though. You look at where they're on the East. 96% of GMs say they're going to finish first. And I think the argument for them not finishing first is them kind of coasting through the regular season a little bit. If you're going to pick one team in the East that would maybe push them a little bit, who would it be?
It's got to be Toronto. The addition of Al Horford in Boston is going to help them against, I think, every other team in the East. But against the Cavs, Al Horford historically has not performed well whatsoever. And there's no reason to believe that that would ever change. And Toronto, no, they didn't make any huge improvements in the offseason, but they were able to take two games from the Cavs in the Eastern Conference Finals. So with most of the East kind of staying packed, I don't see why Toronto wouldn't be that team. Though the one team that I'm looking for to be a lot better this year is Indiana, with the addition of Jeff Teague and Al Jefferson. Yeah.
I think a couple interesting candidates. I think Toronto and Boston are the obvious picks, and I think for good reason. Boston, even if Horford has struggled against the Cavs, they're going to be really good. They're going to play a certain style, and they're going to be very versatile. Toronto was obviously very good last year. Lowry's probably due for some decline because he's a point guard and is going to age a little bit because point guards after 30 tend to decline a little bit. And maybe last year was the best version of those Raptors, especially because they don't have Biombo backing up Jonas Valanciunas anymore. But I think there's another team in the Central, Indiana, I like, because they have probably the second best player in the East in Paul George, who's fully 2 years removed now from that terrible injury. But the Pistons, to me, could be a team that if everything breaks right, they have a very good coach who's the last coach to really beat LeBron in the East. I mean, well, obviously besides Doc, but you had Stan Van Gundy. Reggie Jackson's injury hurts them in terms of getting an optimal seeding, but Drummond's a very big presence in the middle.
Oh, I love Andre Drummond.
He's in the 3-4 shooting, whatever. He can do so many other things, I just don't know how much I care. And you have Stanley Johnson and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Stanley Johnson can be a guy who's not scared of LeBron. He wasn't last year. They played the Cavs tough in the first round. Even if the Cavs swept them, they played them so hard.
I was just going to say, even though they lost in 4 straight, it seemed as though the Pistons played the Cavs tougher than any of the teams that the Cavs faced in the East throughout the playoffs last season.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think obviously Atlanta didn't match up well with the Cavs. I think the Cavs, you know, they lost two games in Toronto, but they were never worried about that series. No. The Pistons were in their face. They were physical. Drummond, I hit LeBron in the back of the head. It was a series where they were like, okay, we're going to at least get our name out there in some way, and I think that was telling.
They clearly were not intimidated by the moment. It was just a case of the Cavs having significantly more talent than Detroit, but Detroit was ready at least as ready as they could be for the moment, and they were taking it to the Cavs to a certain extent.
And that has a lot. I think that has a lot of value for a team that is still very, very young. So we move on. We look at the MVP award. LeBron James, 46.7% of GMs say LeBron is going to win the MVP this year. Russell Westbrook comes in second at 23.3%. Curry and Harden finish tied for third at 10%. Durant at 6.7%. Paul George at 3.3%. For reference, last year LeBron got 39.3% of the vote. He did not win MVP last year. Obviously, Curry was unanimous and won back-to-back MVPs. To me, this, out of all the awards, because some of them I think are kind of weird to predict, like most improved players, just what young player actually scored the most. Rookie of the year is typically who scored the most. Yeah. I mean, Michael Carter Williams was rookie of the year in 2013, and look where he is now. He's really not that good of an NBA player. MVP to me is really hard to predict because I think LeBron very reasonably could win it, but it's really dependent on how much he actually wants to play. And if he takes a 3-week sabbatical and just goes and chills in South Beach, he's not going to win the MVP.
And another reason why it's tough is because we have to decide whether it's actually the most valuable player award or who had the best season. Because someone might have better numbers than LeBron James, but you cannot tell me that there's another player in this league that is more valuable to his team and does more for his team than LeBron James. That being said, my pick is going to be Russell Westbrook just because he's going to put up stupid numbers with no Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I think if the Thunder are good, he deserves to be in the conversation. He will be in the conversation. But I kind of think this is a year where it could get really, really wonky with this voting. I'm not going to say... I mean, you look at, like, thinking back to 2011 when... Or whenever Derrick Rose won MVP.
Because like, LeBron voter fatigue.
Yeah, yeah, LeBron voter fatigue. There's a little bit of hate towards him. Dwight Howard even maybe deserved it that year if you really want to like nitpick that. But I don't think Curry wins it because I don't think another Golden State... He'd have to be absurd to win it.
And he and Kevin Durant are going to be splitting votes on it.
Durant, because of the perception, because of how some people are going to view him, I don't think gets it. I don't think the Pacers are going to be good enough for George to get there. He would have to just be astounding. I don't think the Rockets are necessarily going to be as good as they were a couple of years ago when Harden was the player's choice for MVP and finished second in voting behind Curry. They're going to be. I think he's going to have great numbers, but I don't know how good they're going to be. Westbrook is a really good pick if you think the Thunder are going to finish like fourth or higher in the West. And that's where I think the issue with him goes. And that's where I think maybe LeBron is just he's the de facto candidate because... Let's say he plays 70 games. Let's say he averages 24 points, 7 boards, 6 assists, or something like that, and the Cavs win 57 games. It'd be hard to not give it to him.
Oh, absolutely.
But if he takes 3 weeks off and he plays 65 games and he kind of is lackadaisical at times and Westbrook, you know, averages like 27 points and the Thunder win 50 games, he probably gets it. Kawhi Leonard is a guy, though, I think maybe gets in there because he's the best player in the Spurs. If the Spurs are as good as some people think they can be, and he takes a huge step. He's a sneaky MVP candidate. I hope MVP gets really wonky this year. I'm really here for a very all-over-the-place MVP voting.
And I think you're right. I think it very well could be a wonky MVP voting year if LeBron takes that sabbatical, which, given how much basketball he's played over the last 6 years, making the finals every year, it almost feels like he might have to just to preserve his body for the postseason.
Yeah, and as much as the Cavs are going to be good in the regular season and that the regular season has value if you want to care about seeding, I've never gotten the sense, especially last year and after they won the title, I don't know how much LeBron actually cares about the regular season.
Oh, no. Everything's about the postseason for him. Not that he takes games off, but you can definitely look and see possessions where he's not totally engaged defensively and... And by not totally engaged defensively, I mean
he's standing straight. He's like almost standing straight
nowhere
up.
Near... Like in a good position.
There are guys that cook him in the regular season that have no business even having a chance at cooking LeBron James. I mean, look, just think about the finals. How much... It is unreasonable to expect him, at really, I mean, now that he's over 30, to play at that level over 82 games. Like, just doing what he did in those 7 games and really for most of the playoffs, that A cemented to me that he's the best player in the world, but he's selective about when he does it because he doesn't need to do it all the time for them to be good because he has Kyrie and Kevin Love. But it also just doesn't make sense for him. I mean, look, you think about the Warriors. They pursued 73 games last year, and they were definitely beat up and tired at the end of the year.
Right, you could see it in the finals. And like you said, at this point in his career, LeBron's not about regular season numbers. He's about preserving himself for when it matters most, and that is the postseason, and as it has been the last 6 years, the finals.
Right. So we'll move on. We're going to turn away from LeBron, and we're going to go to Kyrie Irving. So... Kyrie Irving finished 4th in the best point guard in the NBA voting. Stephen Curry obviously was 1st at 63.3%, CP3 at 20%, Westbrook at 10%, and Kyrie is 4th at 6.7%. For reference, Curry was 1st last year at 55.2%, so he got a bit of a bump. Kyrie at 4 is interesting, because I think if you asked most people that cover the NBA, he's maybe... behind that group of Russ, CP3, and Curry. And I probably think he is at this point because I think the defense isn't there. Last year he was not very good. I mean, he was working back from injury. And I'm of the opinion that as much as I love Kyrie and I think he's super fun to watch, there are issues with this game. I think he over-dribbles at times. And I think right now, if you threw him in a hat, if you're drafting a team or forming a team tomorrow, and you put him in a hat with Lillard, Wall, and Lowry, I don't know if you get... You if you pick one of them, you're getting a huge difference. It's, you're going to get stylistic differences. You're going to have, but each guy has a flaw. Kyrie's defense is a problem. Lowry, he's not always in the best of shape. Wall is not a good shooter. Lillard is maybe a worse defender than Kyrie, and all these guys just have their own issues. But I think Kyrie, for if he's the best version of himself, I think is pretty reasonable. I don't think we've seen that yet. The finals, Kyrie is maybe pretty, it has a chance to be a clear number four point guard in the NBA.
Right, and I think this year we're going to see the best version of Kyrie that we've ever seen, simply because, like we said, LeBron probably going to take a bit of a step back this season, in the regular season, so it's going to put more on him. And coming off that huge finals performance and a good performance in the Olympics, his confidence has to be sky high.
Yeah.
And of those four point guards that you mentioned, though, I would say that Kyrie and Lillard are, in my opinion at least, the clear top two of those four.
They're at least, to me, the most fun to watch. I really do like Lowry. I think he's good. I think Lowry was definitely better than the regular season last year, but I don't think you'd be wrong picking him. I really like John Wall, but there's an issue with his ability not to shoot in this NBA. When you can't shoot from that position, and it makes it harder for you to work with other guys and to defer a little bit more. Because Kyrie, as much as he's dazzling with the ball in his hands and is maybe best with the ball in his hands, he can shift off ball and shoot threes. John Wall can't really do that.
Right, and it seems like John Wall has been stuck in neutral for most of his career, where he started out on a solid note and then just his game didn't progress the way it should have for a former number one pick.
Yeah, I 100% agree. He hasn't, and it maybe leans his struggles kind of lean into some of the idea that you can teach shooting, because I don't think it's always the easiest thing in the world to actually teach guys how to shoot. I mean, like, everyone thinks of Jason Kidd as this point guard to learn how to shoot, but he was A, older, and it was Jason Kidd. Like, he's an anomaly. Like, Michael Carter Williams couldn't really learn how to shoot under Jay Kidd, and Jay Kidd was the guy who, you know, learned how to shoot a little bit. So that's maybe a little bit overstated. So we're going to turn away from the Cavs a little bit here, and I just want to get Mike's take on a couple different NBA things. So we're not going to go into any specific awards, because I think those are kind of tricky, and I think this year's rookie class is going to be a bit wonky, but we're gonna ask this first question. And then for reference, the Wolves were the winner of this question at over 50%. Which team will be the most improved in 2016-17?
Well, I think the GM's got it right with this one, with Minnesota. Although, like I mentioned earlier, I'm really looking for Indiana to be sneaky good in the regular season. But you just look at all the potential and all the talent that's on this Timberwolves squad, and them all being of a relatively young age, but showing so much promise this early, you have to be excited about them.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think Utah's a good candidate. I think Gordon Hayward's injury hurts, but the Wolves, I mean, Towns is obviously special. I'm a big Wiggins guy. You got Tibbs coaching them up. I think that certainly helps. New York finished third in this voting, and to me that's super wonky because, like, I'm not sure the Knicks are actually going to be any good. I think Brandon Jennings might be better than Derrick Rose at this point. Is Joakim Noah going to be healthy? Like, there's just so many questions with
the Knicks team. And the Bulls both just kind of feel directionless to me at this point. They're kind of grasping at straws, taking guys that at one point were really effective NBA players. Brandon Jennings might not have been really effective, but for the most part, guys that were really effective NBA players, but at this point, their careers are definitely on the down slope.
Right. So and then we're just gonna finish this up looking at some young players. You're gonna give me three guys that you think might be breakout candidates this year. We'll go back and forth on this. I mentioned this on the Mailbag podcast on Monday, but one of my favorite things in the NBA is watching young players because it's just really fun to watch guys develop and play different roles and kind of turn into something more than what they are. And in the poll, Devin Booker was first, Karl Anthony Towns was second, and both those are pretty slam dunk picks. Miles Turner third, D'Angelo Russell and Wiggins tied for fourth, and then other guys who receive votes include Anthony Davis, which is an interesting thing. Durant got a vote, which is super weird. McCollum, Porzingis, Terry Rozier, which I love. Northeast Ohio's my own Terry Rozier. Yeah. Dennis Schroeder, Marcus Smart. There's a lot of interesting guys, a lot of fun young players. And you know, actually, I'll start on this. The guy I am really excited about, that's good, I think he's going to have a breakout year, it didn't get a vote for whatever reason, and that's Nikola Jokic from the Nuggets. He's a skilled center inside. He can pass. He's already a very savvy scorer. He's getting better at defense. He can hit threes. He can be like a mini, or not a mini because he's huge, but a Marc Gasol type center. Maybe not as good defensively, but maybe potentially better on offense in a couple of years. And I like the Nuggets core in general. Like, I'm a fan of what they have. Moutier is another guy I like. But to me, I love Nikola Jokic. And I think he gives Denver someone to really build on. And that is exciting because Denver could be good in a couple of years. And they maybe could take a leap this year if everything breaks right. And he would be a big part of that.
That's a good choice. The guy I'm going to go with, KCP. And it actually kind of harkens back to your point about the Pistons. If they're going to take that step and really challenge teams in the East, it's going to come down to these young players that have the potential to really put up numbers and really make an impact. And I think he really has that. He has a chance to do so, and I think he'll come through this year. The fact that Anthony Davis was on the list as far as getting votes, I think that just comes down mostly to him staying healthy.
Yeah. And he already got hurt in the preseason, right, which is super, just kind of a bummer.
And his ridiculous potential.
Yeah, I mean, because it's you think about Kat, then I'll give my next pick. A year ago, I think everyone would have looked at you, maybe not you specifically, but like, would have been like, okay, you're a little nuts for putting Anthony Davis ahead of Kat. A year later, Kat is the league's future star, and it's pretty clear why. He was amazing as a rookie, and Davis has been hurt, but it's like Anthony Davis has all this potential, and he's certainly there. My next guy is the guy the Cavs drafted number one overall and traded them for Kevin Love, and that's Wiggins. By this point, there will be an article up that I wrote at FanSided about him, so you should check that out. But to me, he is really going to benefit from Tom Thibodeau. He has some things to work on. He's over-relying on his spin move. He needs to become a better three-point shooter. He needs to become a more willing three-point shooter. Some of that, I think, is going to change because he is no longer coached by Sam Mitchell, who loves and enables him to take long twos. But I think he's got this amazing defensive potential. Because of Kat, he is not under the pressure to be the clear number one guy on this team. And I think every night in and night out in the West, he is going to be guarding guys like Durant. He maybe see some time on a Russell Westbrook or a James Harden or just the elite players of the NBA. He's the guy the Wolves are going to turn to defend those guys, and that is super, super exciting.
I'm with you. It's hard to look at Wiggins and not be excited about him. I mean, bringing in Kat to have alongside Wiggins really, like you said, takes some pressure off of Wiggins. And I think him being traded for Kevin Love and being the number one pick put a lot of pressure on him early on to be this extraordinary talent when he still was, from a basketball standpoint, really raw. His ball handling was an issue. His jump shot was an issue, mm-hmm. which you mentioned both of them. And with Kat being the clear number one and being the future of this team, I think it helps. Obviously, it takes pressure off and it takes focus off of Wiggins, and that'll only help him to shine even brighter this year.
Yeah. We talk about the Wolves, but I'm intrigued by them. Intrigued on this list that I don't know exactly what to make of him is Marcus Smart. Stevens is a guy who utilizes him really well, and he could become a really just maybe transcendent, but he becomes such a useful player for Boston. And he's, you know, they have Jaylen Brown. They didn't get like a Ben Simmons or anything like that, but he's a guy, and I can't even believe we haven't mentioned him until this point because you and I both find him hilarious. I think we at least both find him. How have we knocked about Joel Embiid? Like, Joel Embiid is healthy. He's in preseason, like, literally getting deep position on freaking Andre Drummond. And he's playing back-to-backs. He's hashtagging trust the process still. Like, he's paying homage to Hinkie. I don't know how long it's going to last. It may last 10 games. It may last half of a regular season game. I'm here for the Joel Embiid renaissance.
I mean, I'm with you. I love Joel Embiid as a personality. And if he's healthy as a player, the only issue is, how long can he stay healthy? They scare me. And like you said, 2 years, I cannot trust a guy that had to go for a full year and really light some people up. To your point about Smart, it always seems like there's one guy every year that if he could just learn to shoot, he would turn into, you know, not necessarily a top 15 or even top 25 player, but a guy that can really make an impact on a team. And so many times we see them kind of fall short just because learning to shoot's not an easy thing to do. We were just talking about John Wall. As much as, you know, they say, oh, he just has to learn to shoot, so many guys get stuck learning to shoot and never actually improve their jumper.
Correct. It's a very actually hard skill. Like a guy like Devin Booker can just shoot it. Like he's good at it now, and it's something it seems like maybe you have to be better at it when you're younger because it's just maybe harder to pick up as you get older, you get stronger, because shooting so much is – a rhythm thing. And you talk a thing about like a guy like LeBron, who is really great at everything in the NBA. His worst skill on the court is as a jump shooter. And some of it is because he's just so strong and so bulky. And maybe it's hard. Maybe it's just harder for guys built like that to shoot at eye level.
And part of it, I think, is muscle memory. You know, you mentioned learning when you're at a younger age. And I think that is a really big factor for it, because when you're growing up and you're playing against, you're playing AAU, you're playing against these top high school prospects, you're playing in college, the focus necessarily isn't always on great shooting mechanics. And so by the time you get to the league, you have pretty bad habits or bad form, and it's going to take a long time to fundamentally sound when shooting basketball.
Correct. So we're going to wrap it up on this last question. Hired this summer. KG, Tim Duncan, Kobe Bryant. I think I know who he's going to answer. But Mike, who are you going to miss? One specific player? I'm going to be like, I'm going to be audibly shocked that you didn't pick a certain player.
I'm going to miss Tim Duncan quite a bit, simply because I loved watching him in the Spurs. I'm just doing this from a personal standpoint. I've loved watching Kobe play pretty much my whole life. He's my favorite player of all time. Although I'm going to miss the fact that he's in the league, but I'm not going to miss watching him play, because last year, with the exception of the final game, it was not fun to watch. He was a shell of himself.
No, it was not a fun... Watching last year, Kobe wasn't, like, not...
It looked like he was laboring, which he was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was time for him to go, but even with that being said, it's hard to say goodbye to a legend like that. You're never not going to miss watching Kobe play.
Correct. Last thing. I will say that I miss KG. I went to see the Wolves play and they're in Cleveland because I wanted to see KG. Where can people find you on Twitter if they want to give you a follow?
I'm at @m_drapcho21.
As he, out of everyone that is on the Fear the Sword staff, he lead studio guest. I've had a back-to-back days, which is great. So as always, you can find me on Twitter at @CWMWrites. Find the show on Twitter at @LockedOnCavs. Find us on Facebook at @LockedOnCavs. Follow the whole network at Locked On Network. As always, make sure you still get your mailbag questions in for next Monday. We love getting your questions. I love answering your questions, so make sure to get us those, and make sure to submit those via email or Twitter. We're really happy to get those different things. Any kind of questions you have, just submit them, and you'll give us a rating and review on iTunes. It helps other people find the show, and we appreciate that. So thanks again for Mike for coming on. This has been Chris Manning. This has been Locked On Cavs. We'll talk to you tomorrow.